This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Cars today are built to last, but how they look is up to you, and that's where Maaco comes in. They specialize in cosmetic repairs. Let's say it's affordable paint jobs to fixing those annoying dents and dings. Whatever it is, Maaco has you covered. With more Americans keeping their cars longer, now's the time to protect your investment and keep it looking sharp for years. Get started. Visit your local Maaco today. Get the free estimate and see how easy it is to bring new life to your ride. Uh-oh, better get Maaco.
Follow the Minds of Madness on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts to listen to our episodes early and ad-free and get access to monthly exclusive episodes. Go to patreon.com/madnesspod. You can also hit subscribe on Apple Podcasts for ad-free episodes. We've got links in our show notes.
The opinions expressed in the following episode do not necessarily reflect those of the Minds of Madness podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
In 1979, criminologists Lawrence Cohen and Marcus Felsen proposed a theory about violent crime. They argued, for violence to occur, three elements must converge: a motivated offender, a suitable target, and the absence of capable guardians. Like planets falling into a perfect orbit, these elements must align in both time and space. When we think of a motivated offender, most of us imagine someone driven by rage, greed, or vendetta, criminality with a clear motive. But there's another terrifying motivation often overlooked: sheer randomness. Good people in the wrong place at precisely the wrong time. Consider a simple hiking trail. To most of us, it represents peaceful recreation and an escape into nature. But through the lens of criminology, it can represent something darker. A space between worlds where the rules of civilization begin to fade. Where guardians are few and escape routes are plenty. In April 2022, in the quiet capital of Concord, New Hampshire, these elements aligned with devastating consequences. A retired humanitarian couple out for an afternoon stroll, a drifter with a loaded gun, and a secluded trail on a perfect spring day. Join me now as we examine the senseless murders of Stephen and Wendy Reed, a retired couple who went out for a walk and never came back. You'll hear how a missed tennis match became the catalyst for a missing person's manhunt, and how a mysterious drifter turned a peaceful hiking trail into a hunting ground, and then disappeared like a ghost without a trace. Well, almost without a trace. Springtime arrived slowly in New Hampshire, a rugged state nestled in the northeastern corner of the U.S. By mid-April, while cities to the south are already in full bloom, trees in the state capital of Concord are just beginning to bud. The air still carries a bite from New England's long winter, but for those drawn to the outdoors, it's perfect hiking weather. On Monday, April 18th, 2022, Stephen and Wendy Reed stepped out of their apartment around 2:30 in the afternoon. The sun was shining. It was 57 degrees. Not a cloud in the sky. For the retired couple, afternoon walks became a part of their daily routine since moving back to Stephen's hometown of Concord 3 years earlier. 67-year-old Stephen had spent his career overseeing humanitarian projects in places like Bangladesh, Liberia, and Haiti. His wife, 66-year-old Wendy, had been the star player of the Togo national basketball team, representing the small West African nation. They first met in Washington, D.C. in 1982. He was working for the Peace Corps. She was in college on an athletic scholarship. The reserved New Hampshire native and the outgoing West African athlete formed an unlikely but perfect match. They were married in Senegal in 1984, and for the next 35 years, they dedicated their lives to international humanitarian work, serving some of the world's most vulnerable populations. Now, during their well-deserved retirement, the serene trails of central New Hampshire offered the couple a peaceful way to stay active and enjoy each other's company. The route they chose that day was called the Marsh Loop, a trail that winds through open wetlands and sections of dense New Hampshire woods. From their apartment, Stephen and Wendy walked north along a footpath, connecting them to the trail system about 500 yards away. It was a route they knew well. But Stephen and Wendy weren't the only ones on the trail that day.
I went to hike with my two dogs, who are both fairly small, on the Marsh Loop Trail. Every day, three times a day, one way or the other, we get out.
The woman speaking is Nan Nutt, a retired doctor with a PhD in microbiology and immunology.
The Marsh Loop Trail is somewhat like what it sounds like. It circles around a marshy area. And I enjoyed especially hiking the Marsh Loop Trail when I was with the dogs because I kept them on leashes and I preferred not to encounter other people because it tended to wrap the leashes around other folks.
Nan parked her car near the trailhead and started walking. Checking her watch, she noted the time as 2:48 p.m.
By the time I was hiking it, it was heavily overgrown brush, but no trees. There was one fairly soggy area, which I think they have now put some boards across so that you don't have to walk in the mush. But it was pretty overgrown.
Not in a hurry, Nan took her time walking with her dogs, happy to let them stop and sniff while they strolled toward the wooded section of the trail.
There aren't a lot of people on that trail, or at least compared to some of the other pieces of this group of trails. We were probably just a few minutes in, maybe as much as 5 minutes in, and I heard a couple, or at least what I thought was a couple, because they were talking to one another, coming up behind me. And the trail is fairly narrow, and I thought it would be polite to step off, because myself and the dogs are pretty slow. The dogs sniff, 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 everything. So I did step off with the dogs, and these folks went past me. A white male, medium height, and a black female who was somewhat shorter. And I'm not very good at guessing ages, but I would have put them probably in their late 50s to late 60s.
The couple passing Nan on the trail was Stephen and Wendy Reed.
I could hear them talking as they came up behind me. Very comfortable conversation, and they continued talking to one another. They did not speak to me. The man nodded as they went by. That was it. They seemed to be appropriately dressed for what they were doing. They kept walking, and we kept walking. I always refer to it as we, because I'm talking about myself and the two dogs. We all kept walking, started walking again. For a little while, I couldn't see them at all. As we started on down the trail and the bushes were less dense, I saw them heading up the trail towards the woods. I would say they were probably 200 yards ahead of me.
Stephen and Wendy soon disappeared down the trail and into the woods. Eventually, Nan and her dogs made it to the woods as well.
we went into the woods, and within a fairly short time, 3 to 5 minutes or possibly a little more, suddenly heard shots, very loud. I heard 5. Bang, bang, slight pause, bang, 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 in front and off to the right from where we were. All of us jumped, dogs and me. I am not much of a gun person, but my impression was that this was a gun, not a rifle. First thought was I didn't have any orange on me or the dogs. But then I thought, wait, it's April. Shouldn't be hunting now, as far as I knew. I don't think it's hunting season. I didn't think there should be any hunting. My next thought was, I've been watching too much awful TV.
Initially, the gunshots frightened Nan, but she soon managed to convince herself she was just overreacting and didn't need to be scared.
I decided time to walk on, and we did.
Nan and her dogs walked further and further into the New Hampshire woods, and before long, saw someone else on the trail.
We were on a section of the trail that is basically straight, and we saw a young man, white man, standing, looking to the right of the trail into the woods. Medium height, about 5'10", not skinny, but slender, mid-20s to early 30s. He doesn't look like the normal, whatever that means, hiker or walker on this trail. Reminded me of people that I see around town who are homeless people. He had a plastic grocery bag. It looked heavy, so it looked like it was loaded. And as I came up closer, I could see some object sticking out sideways that looked like, to me, the top of something like a peanut butter jar.
The inkling of fear she'd felt after hearing the gunshots returned as Nan prepared to walk past the stranger on the trail.
He continued to look into the woods for a while. He appeared to be staring, not scanning. His head was not moving. He was just staring straight ahead. My first thought was he heard the same thing, the same shots I heard. And as I came fairly close, within 5 to 10 yards, he turned to look at me. He just made me feel anxious, but I didn't think he belonged on the trail, so that combination affected me. Because he made me uncomfortable, I turned around to make sure that I knew what he was wearing. He was clean-shaven, in khaki pants and a navy blue sweatshirt, which might have been a hoodie. He had a day pack on his back that was black. I cannot remember whether or not he had a hat. A moment after I turned around, he turned around and looked at me. And then I turned around, back around, and kept walking.
Within the hour, Nan had finished her walk and headed home. The gunshots, the man on the trail, and the couple who'd passed by her quickly faded from her mind. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds, because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. Funny thing about being fast? You end up waiting a lot. First to show up, first in line, then just waiting. Me, I rev up Chumba Casino. With over 200 social casino games, no slow lanes here. Why sit around when you can spin? I'm already racing. Your turn. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. That's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
2 days later, on the morning of Wednesday, April 20th, Stephen failed to show up for a scheduled tennis doubles match with his brother Peter.
When I got home from work, I received a text from my brother Peter.
This is Susan Forey, Stephen's younger sister.
Texted me to say that he was concerned because Steve hadn't shown up at tennis that morning for a doubles match, and that's very unlike him. He's very polite, and he would be very considerate of the fact that people had the time and the money invested in that match. So Peter had called him, obviously, and texted him, and his wife, Bobby, had called and texted him, and there was no answer. So to the point where Peter went over to their apartment to check on him. And then I think because there were no answers, that's when he texted me. He was growing more concerned.
Susan drove over to Stephen and Wendy's apartment to have a look for herself. As a retired veteran of the New Hampshire State Troopers, she wanted to see if she could discover a clue that might explain where her brother had gone.
Their glasses were in the apartment. Their sunglasses were in the apartment. Their car keys were there. The apartment was neat. Their computer was there. And they weren't.
Stephen and Wendy's cars were still parked outside, and nothing seemed amiss inside the apartment. Peter and Susan decided to start contacting family and friends to see if they could find out when the last time that anybody had seen or heard from them.
I checked with all those different people, and basically the last time, day-wise, that they had been heard from was Monday, the 18th. Just realized that something was terribly wrong, so I knew that I had to report them missing.
State troopers began coordinating with local police, and the search for Stephen and Wendy began almost immediately. Knowing that the couple often took afternoon hikes, the search quickly focused on the extensive network of trails near their apartment. But which trail the Reeds had taken was anyone's guess. As darkness fell on April 20th, teams of searchers continued combing through the dense woods with flashlights, calling out the Reeds' names. But there was no sign of the missing couple. Detective Garrett Lemoyne of the Concord Police Department was searching the forest when he came across a tent pitched among the trees.
I observed it appeared to be a single person tent. The tent was probably about 100 yards, I would say, into the woods from that dirt parking lot in the rear of the apartment complex. Outside of the tent, there was a substantial amount of Mountain Dew cans, red Mountain Dew cans, which you don't see as much as regular Mountain Dew cans, and the tent was closed up.
Camping in that part of the woods was illegal, but it wasn't unusual for police to catch drifters trying anyway.
We walked up to the tent, and I kind of shook the corner of the tent. It's a common thing we do with the transient community here in Concord, kind of like knocking on a door. I identified myself, and I made contact with a male inside the tent.
The man inside appeared to be in his mid to late 20s.
He was clean-shaven and had shorter brown hair. By shorter, I don't mean buzz cut, but above the ears, I guess. He gave the name Arthur Kelly. I told the male that we are investigating a report of two missing people in the area, and then I proceeded to ask him if he saw anyone else around the trails or heard anything. He said that he left his tent in the morning, returned in the afternoon, had not seen anybody. He was kind of just staying there for the night, passing through, hadn't seen anyone else. He said that he didn't believe he was doing anything wrong and he didn't want to have any further interaction with the police. I told him that we weren't investigating him for any criminal acts at the time. We were just looking for two missing people. I explained to him I found it suspicious he was being uncooperative when I was just trying to look for missing people.
The man insisted that he simply didn't like talking to police and didn't want to answer any more questions.
One of my last questions to him were, is your real name Arthur Kelly? And he said, yes, it is.
As the sun set over the woods of Concord, New Hampshire, there were still no signs of Stephen or Wendy Reed. By the morning, they'd obtained a search warrant for the location data from Stephen's cell phone.
conducted a search warrant on Stephen Reed's data. I'm not sure exactly which data that was, but essentially they received a ping in the woods from his phone off of the Marsh Loop Trail.
Now focused on the Marsh Loop Trail, detectives set out with the help of State Trooper Brett Berry.
So at that point, we did a map study. We received a ping location of a phone. So we plugged it into our maps, looked at our map study, realized that this was in an area that had not been touched.
Along with Trooper Berry was his trusted canine, Oakley.
I give her a search command, and we begin to grid at those coordinates. And it was not more than, I would say, 5 to 10 minutes of actual searching before I noticed a head snap, a change in behavior. She began going to a base of a tree. I noticed she got to a pile of what looked like leaves, sticks, thatch at the base of the tree. I noticed the change in the tail and the change in the body posture. I began to walk closer. As I was coming closer, her head went into the pile. At that point, I was almost up on top of her. She became very tense. I put my hand on her back, and as I looked, I saw what appeared to be the back of a human's skull. I noticed black hair, and at that point, I removed Oakley and myself immediately. I believe this to be a crime scene.
The pile of leaves and debris Oakley found was about 100 feet from the Marsh Loop Trail. Trooper Berry quickly let the other officers, including Detective Lemoyne, know what he discovered.
We came across a mound of leaves and dirt and sticks. We could kind of observe through the mound what appeared to be hair. So we slowly delayered the mound to either confirm or not confirm what we believed we were looking at. And as we delayered the mound, we confirmed what we saw was human hair, who we believed to be from Wendy Reed, as well as Stephen Reed was also within the mound.
When investigators removed the leaves and debris covering the bodies, they discovered that both Stephen and Wendy had suffered multiple gunshot wounds. Wendy had been shot twice in the head and neck, Stephen twice in the left arm, once in the shoulder, and once in the back. The evidence at the scene told a disturbing story. The Reeds had been shot on the trail and then dragged downhill about 100 feet into the woods. And if it weren't for the location data on Stephen's phone, the bodies may have never been found at all. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
When investigators arrived at the crime scene, they expected to find plenty of evidence, but came up empty. Even after scouring the area with metal detectors, they couldn't find a single shell casing from the bullets that killed the Reeds. The autopsy, however, uncovered bullet fragments from both Stephen and Wendy, identifying them as 9mm rounds. Now that the missing persons cases had officially become a double homicide, Detective Lemoyne went back to Arthur Kelly's campsite to speak with him again on Friday, April 22nd.
We went back to the area where I had contact with the tent and Arthur Kelly. And the tent was gone. All the red Mountain Dew cans that I remembered being there were gone. And I essentially could not locate anything left behind. The impression on the ground that the tent left, that was it.
Arthur Kelly had vanished like a ghost. Detective Lemoyne considered the possibility that the drifter had simply kept his word and moved on. But at almost the exact same time he discovered the abandoned campsite, Dr. Nan Nutt was reading an article about the Reeds in the local paper.
My neighbor showed me an article from the paper about the couple that I had seen on the trail. There was a picture in the article. It was absolutely the couple that I had seen. I thought that's the time to call the police because I knew I had seen them on the trail.
Nan described to police what she'd seen and heard on the trail, the gunshots and the mysterious stranger she'd encountered just minutes later. She was describing the exact location where police now knew the murders had taken place. But what piqued Detective Lemoyne's interest was Nan's description of the stranger, a dead ringer for the drifter he knew as Arthur Kelly. Racking his brain for any possible clues, the detective focused on the one thing he remembered from the original encounter with Arthur, the Red Mountain Dew cans.
I traveled to some stores close by within walking distance of that area to maybe try and capture this male on video purchasing the Red Mountain Dew cans. First went to Shell gas station. I believe they didn't even sell Red Mountain Dew cans. Then went to Walmart. And we reviewed every transaction involving Code Red Mountain Dew cans within the days before and after my contact with this guy.
The process was painstaking as he watched every single Red Mountain Dew purchase on the Walmart surveillance footage.
We came across this one transaction where there was a male wearing a full bandana mask over his face, which at the time, masks were no longer being worn by individuals due to the coronavirus. So it was somewhat suspicious in nature for people to wear full bandana masks in Walmart at that time. We watched this transaction, and as I watched the transaction, I believe that it to be the same male that I had contact with in the tent. From what I could see, he was wearing a hat and bandana, but the hair looked similar to me. From what I could see, he was clean shaven. And I believed it was the same male.
Detective Lemoyne became convinced that Arthur Kelly, the man buying Mountain Dew, and the stranger Dr. Nan Nutt had seen on the Marsh Loop Trail were all the same person. But without any other leads to go on, the investigation came to a virtual standstill. On May 20th, 1 month after the bodies had been discovered, police and prosecutors went back out to the crime scene to take another look. Among those reinvestigating the scene was former Assistant Attorney General Jeffrey Ward.
So we walked the trail back into the area that I understood from the investigation to be the crime scene on the trail. There's a large tree on the right-hand side of the trail that, at least for me, sort of marked the area where the bodies were then found off the trail. So we went off the trail, walked that area, and then returned to the main trail. We were, again, standing around talking, looking around. I walked a few feet further down the trail, so beyond that tall tree. I wanted to walk down there and look down the trail and just see it from that perspective, from a different perspective. So in standing there and in looking around, at some point, I looked down to my left and saw, to me, what appeared to be a couple shell casings in the leaves and pine needles. I stepped back and immediately alerted Detective Brown I don't remember exactly what I said, but something to the effect of, come take a look at this.
Two 9mm shell casings were found in the leaves by the trail. Ballistics confirmed they were both fired from the same gun, but there was no way to tell if the bullet fragments from the autopsy matched the casings. As spring turned into summer, police in Concord learned from residents about another campsite in the woods surrounding the Marsh Loop Trail. This one had been destroyed by fire. In a police report from April 15th, an officer described finding a tent in the woods at the exact same location, just 3 days before the Reed murders. Later, a local resident came forward to police with a photo of the same site taken 5 days later on April 20th. But this time, the site had been completely reduced to ashes. That meant the site had been burned right around the time of the homicides, which had occurred on April 18th. When Detective Nicole Murray went out to investigate the burned campsite in July, she found an extremely bizarre scene. Among the ashes were 155 small propane bottles that had been stacked inside the tent before being set on fire.
It appeared to us that someone had burned a tent in its entirety with all of these propane tanks. You can see pieces of the tent. Those rods draped over appear to be pieces of a tent. And there are many propane tanks, other what appears to be pots and pans, things of the like.
Detectives developed a new theory based on when they believed the site was burned, one they hoped could crack the case.
That the man known to us as Arthur Kelly had perhaps stayed at this site up until the homicides. And my purpose in going to the site on this day was to collect any evidence that might lead us to identifying ownership or occupancy of the site.
Sifting through the rubble, detectives uncovered a few crucial pieces of evidence. Red Mountain Dew cans, a spent shell casing, and several items with identifiable barcodes. Headphones, pants, scissors, and more. Ballistics tests would later confirm the shell casings matched the casings found on the Marsh Loop Trail. With few leads, detectives turned to Walmart, combing through transactions tied to the barcoded items. It was a long shot, but it worked. They traced the purchases to a prepaid debit card and through surveillance footage identified the buyer, Arthur Kelly. Police caught a break when they subpoenaed the prepaid card's bank records and found a key transaction. Arthur Kelly had bought from an online bulk supplement supplier, but the shipping invoice listed another name, Logan Clegg, a name unfamiliar to New Hampshire police, but well known in other states. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
As it turned out, Arthur Kelly was just an alias Logan Clegg had used since moving to Concord in November 2021. The reason for the fake name? He was a fugitive. Logan, 26, grew up in Washington State. In May 2018, he killed a man in Spokane. Prosecutors ruled it as self-defense, but Logan fled before they could even tell him. By 2020, he was in Utah, where his legal troubles only grew. He was arrested twice in Utah, once in Salt Lake City for shoplifting, where police found a stolen gun on him, and again for burglary, with another stolen gun in his backpack. After serving 72 days in jail, he was put on probation, but fled to Portugal in June 2021, violating probation and triggering a warrant. By November 2021, Logan was back in the U.S., living under an alias and camping near the Marshalloop Trail. He worked briefly at McDonald's, but vanished by September 2022, long before police uncovered his real identity. On October 12, 2022, Concord Police received an unexpected call from Homeland Security. Logan Clegg was trying to leave the country. He booked a one-way ticket to Germany on October 14th. Detective Lemoyne found that a phone number had been used to buy the tickets and obtained a search warrant to track its location.
I was told that the pings were coming in to Vermont. I responded to Concord Police Department, reviewed the pings for myself, and made a determination to go to Vermont.
The location pings pointed detectives to general areas around Burlington, Vermont, about 2.5 hours northwest of Concord. So they fanned out their search for Logan, and Detective Lemoyne entered a Price Chopper supermarket to track down their primary suspect.
When I walked into the store, there was the line of registers, and I just naturally looked in front of me, and at the end of the registers was a male who I immediately recognized as Arthur Kelly Logan Clegg, talking with what appeared to be Price Chopper employees. He was wearing a baseball-style hat similar to the photographs from Walmart. He had a backpack on, a black backpack. And I notified Detective Doyon, who was still checking other areas in that general location, to come to my location at Price Chopper. And then I let people know at Concord Police Headquarters that we found him.
When police arrested Logan Clegg in South Burlington, they found more than just a fugitive. Inside his backpack was $7,000 in cash, a Glock 17 9mm handgun, and a fake Romanian ID card bearing the name Claude Zemo, but showing Logan's photo on it. Investigators also discovered he'd wiped his hard drive clean off the laptop he'd been carrying in the days after the Reed murders. Detective Wade Brown was assigned to interrogate Logan.
I asked him if he was in Concord around April of 2022. He said he didn't believe he was, that he had left. He estimated around March when there was snow on the ground. He said that he did not read or watch the news and that he had not heard of the murders.
Detective Brown then asked Logan if he ever shopped at Walmart.
He said that he only went there a couple of times. He basically said that he was not the person that bought propane tanks. And he basically asked, how do you even cook? And I replied that presumably that's what the propane tanks are for, is for heating cooking equipment. And he said, that's not something I ever did, or something to that effect.
It was obvious Logan was lying through his teeth, but the detective kept calmly asking him questions. He then asked Logan if he remembered running into any police officers at his campsite in the woods.
He described seeing Concord police officers, but he said that he never had any conversation and was never stopped by any Concord PD officers while he was in Concord, and that the last officer or last police contact he had was in Utah. I described how our officers encountered a man in a tent on April 20th and asked if that was him, if he had contact with Concord PD on either of those days, and he said no. I described that the man in the tent gave the name Arthur Kelly and that an officer had asked twice and the person gave the same name, and I asked if he had ever used the name Arthur Kelly or given the name Arthur Kelly to Concord Police, and he said no.
Detectives knew Logan was lying to them about his whereabouts at the time of the murder. In fact, they'd since found surveillance footage of Logan at Walmart on April 19th, the day after the murders. In the footage, he wasn't wearing a mask or bandana. There was no doubt it was him. But even more damning was what he was purchasing that day, a brand new tent and sleeping bag. Why would he have needed a new tent? Because he'd just burned down his old one, with 155 propane bottles inside of it. But all of this, the suspicious behavior, the lying, the fake identities, and the attempt to flee the country was circumstantial. Prosecutors needed something concrete to tie Logan directly to the murders of Stephen and Wendy. That evidence would come from the New Hampshire State Police Forensic Lab. When technicians fired the Glock 17 found in Logan's backpack, the ballistics matched perfectly. The shell casings recovered from both the crime scene and the burnt campsite had been fired from the exact same weapon. It was the smoking gun prosecutors needed. On October 2nd, 2023, 18 months after the murders of Stephen and Wendy Reed, Logan Clegg's trial began. The prosecution laid out its entire case before the jury.
They went out for a walk on April 18th and they never came back because they were murdered by this man. After he killed them, he dragged their bodies off the trail. He later concealed them so no one would find the evidence of his crimes. When the police spoke to him a couple of days later, he lied. He said his name was Arthur Kelly. He lied because he was guilty and he knew it. And after the police left, he ran. He left Concord, he left New Hampshire, because he knew he was guilty. He left and he kept running, but he was found. The Concord police found him. And when they found him, he was in Burlington, Vermont. What did he have with him? A one-way ticket to Germany, thousands of dollars in cash, a fake ID from Romania, and the murder weapon in his backpack. He had the murder weapon with him. Those casings did come from the real killer's gun, and it was the defendant. It was his 9mm Glock 17 pistol that fired those casings and left them on the Marsh Loop Trail after he killed Stephen and Wendy.
Logan's defense was simple. Police had the wrong guy. They contended that the state's case was the result of bias and unfortunate coincidence. To explain the shell casings from Logan's gun discovered at the crime scene, the defense accused the police of planting the cases on May 20th, a month after the murders.
The man that Dr. Nutt saw on the trail that day was not Logan Clegg. There's zero evidence to support that. Dr. Nutt said that person was not winded, they weren't sweating, they weren't bloody, they weren't dirty, nothing. I would put to you that Dr. Nutt is literally living proof that she did not see the killer. The casings at the scene were not found until May because they were not there in April. They were not there to find. We can't tell you who, when, or why those casings were planted, but they were. They were not there in April.
The prosecution responded to the shocking accusation with a surprising revelation of its own. Crime scene photos from April 23rd clearly showed shell casings among the leaves, but detectives and photo analysts had missed them at the time. Once they knew where to look, it was obvious the shell casings were at the scene from the start. The prosecution also highlighted Logan's consciousness of guilt, actions only a guilty person would take after a murder.
They were killed the day before in the afternoon. The next morning, as their bodies are lying somewhere off the Marsh Loop Trail, the defendant went to Walmart. And what did he buy? A new tent? A new sleeping bag? His campsite was burned by April 20th, the next day. Is that a coincidence? It's not. The defendant bought those things because he was about to burn his campsite, destroy any evidence that could link him to those murders the morning after the police asked him about Stephen and Wendy. He bought a bus ticket out of town. The defendant was using a different fake name than the one he'd given the night before, because he knew he was guilty. He didn't want to be caught. What else did he do that morning? The morning after the police asked him about Stephen and Wendy, he erased information from his computer. When the police found the defendant, he had thousands of dollars in cash with him. He had that fake Romanian ID with his picture and a fake name on it, and a one-way ticket to Germany. He was planning to run away and never come back. He wasn't going on vacation. He was escaping. The defendant's actions are evidence of his consciousness of guilt. They are evidence that he knew he was guilty. He was guilty and he knew it, and he wanted to cover it up. Innocent people don't have clearly fake Romanian ID cards shipped from England in their backpacks. The defendant did.
The prosecution never gave the jury a clear motive for the murders. Something the defense would hit hard in its closing argument.
The state said in their opening that they wouldn't present any evidence of a motive. They kept their word on that. There is no motive, at least not for Logan. Remember, the Reeds were swiftly and deliberately executed. There was a motive. They just haven't found it because they haven't found the killer. When they find the real killer or killers, they will find the motive.
Jury deliberations began on Friday, October 20th, 2023. By the afternoon of Monday, the 23rd, the jury had reached its verdict.
Do you find the defendant guilty or not guilty?
Guilty.
You say you find the defendant guilty?
Yes.
So say you all, ladies and gentlemen of the jury?
Yes. Yes.
Logan Clegg was found guilty of second-degree murder and received two sentences of 50 years to life in prison. At minimum, Logan will be 77 years old by the time he's eligible for parole. But at sentencing, the judge called Logan a stone-cold killer and declared, "There is no chance, if this sentence holds, that he will spend a day outside of the prison." This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
After the verdict, Stephen and Wendy's son Brian spoke to the media.
My name is Brian Reed, son of Stephen and just Wendy Reed. I want to thank every member of the jury for their decision today. There's no doubt in my mind that the defendant would have killed again and again and again until he was stopped. Be it Romania, Portland, Maine, Berlin, Germany, it wouldn't have mattered. It has no bearing on his, its, non-existent moral compass. A liar, a thief, a murderer has been brought to justice today. More importantly, let it be known the legacy of my parents' humanitarian work, their kindness, and their love for life will endure. Let today be a reminder of the value of human life and the strength of community. For myself, our families, and everyone who carried and shared our pain, may the justice that has been served aid in the work of our healing.
Stephen and Wendy Reed spent their lives making the world a better place. Their story wasn't meant to end on a trail in New Hampshire. It was meant to end peacefully. Surrounded by the family and community, they dedicated their lives to serving. They deserved better than to have their lives cut short by a senseless and completely random act of violence. At sentencing, Stephen's sister Susan spoke about the profound impact of their loss and the community's determination to persevere in the face of it.
Any impact statement the court receives from victims who suffered the loss of Wendy and Steve Reed could span pages. They spent their lives in service of others. Their celebration of life was attended by people who traveled from 4 countries and 9 states. Family, friends, colleagues, mentors, mentees, roommates, teammates, and neighbors. For 2 law-abiding, productive members of society to lose their lives to violence in broad daylight, in a low-crime city, in a low-crime state, left many people feeling victimized, not just our families. The loss of a sense of security and faith in the general goodness of one's fellow man continues to shake us all. Losing a loved one is always difficult. Losing 2 loved ones at the same time is doubly so, and losing them senselessly is almost unbearable. We are irreparably damaged by this loss in myriad ways. Thankfully, we are a strong family and community. So although damaged, we will not allow evil to break us. And because of who they were, Wendy and Steve wouldn't have it any other way.
And now I'd like to introduce the podcast, Mortal Musings.
Lads, do you enjoy getting traumatized on a weekly basis? Well, neither does my co-host Neil.
People call me a victim more than a co-host.
Anyway, welcome to the Mortal Musings podcast. I'm your host, Megan. Each week, we dive into some truly dark and disturbing cases. Do you ever find yourself listening to these horrific tales and saying to yourself,
huh? No. Huh? What the actual f***? Why? Why did he do that? Solved it, mate. There's no need for that. They're just acting the b***.
Our episodes include cases of serial killers, the story of a socialite that was held captive for 25 years, prison riots, wrongful executions, and scandals in the death industry. At the end of each episode, we throw in a tale of oddity. Anything from medical mishaps to the real-life Weekend at Bernie's or Mike the Headless Chicken. New episodes every Wednesday. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
And remember, here at the Mortal Musings podcast, we like to take the cases seriously, but not ourselves.
Follow the Minds of Madness on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. To support the show and get access to ad-free episodes, extra content, and Patreon-exclusive episodes, go to patreon.com/madnesspod. To find us on Instagram and Facebook, search The Minds of Madness, and on Twitter using the handle @madnesspod. And also, by checking out our sponsors and using our promo codes, you're also helping support the show. We've got all the links in our episode notes. So until next week, thanks for listening.
Riley Herbst from 2311 Racing here, and you know what grinds my gears? Waiting for coffee. But instead of counting frappes and lattes, I fire up Chumba Casino. No apps, no fuss, just fun social casino games to pass the time. By the time my coffee's ready,
order for Riley.
I've already taken a few victory laps. Next time you're stuck waiting, make it entertaining. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.